the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast with you on a very busy Monday. Got a lot going on this episode of the podcast. We've got a couple interviews for you coming up. We've got Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter, to talk about the state of the Brewers as they limp their way toward the All-Star break. Have a couple weeks to go, trying to get there in one piece. They had an interesting series over the weekend in Cincinnati, won a couple games, looked all a little rough in the last couple games, but they still come into the week a half game ahead of the Chicago Cubs in the National League Central, so they are still holding in there, and we'll hopefully be getting a little healthier soon. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am the host of the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. On this episode, we've got Jesus Aguilar, Brewers first baseman and an All-Star candidate. We'll find out if he makes the All-Star team here in the next 10 days. He's been having a tremendous season, become a very popular player, and I had a chance to sit down with him for a little bit, talk about his experiences in the Cleveland Indians organization for a long time before he came over to Milwaukee as a waiver claim last year, and definitely fun to get to talk to kind of one of the centerpieces of the Brewers 2018 attack, really. And then after that, Tom Flanagan, the Brewers farm director, sat down to talk about some of the things that he does, overseeing the minor leagues and player development in the organization, especially with the draft having been completed and some new guys coming into the system, and also talked about a number of top prospects in the organization and names that you'll know because they could, you know, be key contributors for the Brewers down the line, but also because with the trade deadline coming up, these are names that are going to keep popping up as possible chips to be dealt for some big time trade possibilities. The Brewers may be looking to upgrade this year. There's a lot of big names getting floated about, and will remain to be seen if the Brewers will be active, but certainly they're in position to do so. Before I welcome in Tom Haudricourt, I want to remind you that you can find us all over the map. You can find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. If you find us on Apple, please be sure to rank and review us. We haven't had a lot of reviews. In fact, a few days ago, I checked, we had zero reviews. We had a few rankings, but nobody leaving their comments, which is fine. That could be a good thing. Sometimes no news is good news, but feel free to let us know what you think. Happy to take any feedback you want to send my way personally. You can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. You can certainly find ways to contact me any number of ways and let me know what you think, and happy to take the feedback. We have not had much feedback on the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast, so let me know what you think. Rate and review us. That'll help us reach a broader audience, which obviously we're always trying to do. So Tom Haudricourt is here. He's going to chat about the Brewers injury situation. Orlando Arcia, he went down to AAA for the second time this year as he tries to get right offensively. Brewers had some pitching issues with some of the newer guys that were brought onto the team in Cincinnati. And also Travis Shaw has been banged up a little bit. We talked about the DL a little bit and why the Brewers seem so hesitant to use that. But here he is. My guest is Tom Haudricourt, Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter. And Tom, the Brewers are getting set to start another seven-game homestand here as they limp into the All-Star break. And their regular shortstop, Orlando Arcia, gets sent down again. Second time the team has sent him down. This time it's because really they needed an arm with Wilkerson coming up. But what is your take on him right now? Even if this ends up being a lost year overall, I don't think that's necessarily a terrible sign for him going forward, but have you started to wonder if the long-term prognosis with him is taking a little bit of a hit with the way he's played offensively this season?
Well, he's definitely regressed badly offensively from last year to this year. He's still a young player, and I've seen that before, so, you know, we'll wait and see over time if he's able to get back to where he was. He actually, you know, was doing quite well offensively last year. He batted 275, had like 15 homers and 50 some RBIs. And when you can play shortstop, like Arcia can play shortstop, that's plenty good at the plate. But this year, you know, he got off to a bad start. I don't know if he panicked or what, but he basically just has been swinging at everything. They pinch hit him Saturday night in Cincinnati, and the game was long lost. But he struck out on a pitch 2 feet off the plate. I mean, he had no chance to hit it. And he needs to rediscover his plate discipline and his ball strike judgment, because he's totally missing the boat on plate discipline right now. You don't have to throw him a strike. He'll swing at anything. So he's just, you know, I'm sure he's pressing like crazy, or was pressing like crazy. And they didn't get to do what they wanted the first time. They wanted to send him down, let him stay down there until he was comfortable at the plate and what did have his confidence back. But then Saladino, who was going to replace him at short, got hurt 4 days later. Still has not returned to action, although I think we might see him soon. Sprained his ankle very badly. And so they had to call Arcia back just to have a shortstop. It's been kind of a calamity in the middle infield for them this year because Arcia has had this horrible year offensively. His primary backup, Sogard, is having even a worse year offensively. Their number one middle infield prospect, Mauricio Dubon, tore his ACL in April at Colorado Springs, was lost for the year, or he'd probably be the shortstop right now. Saladino got hurt. I mean, it's just been a calamity of epic proportions trying to get a shortstop that's healthy and productive. So the one good thing about Arcia was he never took it out into the field,
Right.
and there is some value, some more than a little bit of value to run prevention. If you're not going to score runs or produce runs, preventing them is a something that's highly valued. So we'll see. But unless somebody gets hurt again or whatever, they do have Brad Miller in the equation now, who wasn't there the first time around. They acquired him from Tampa Bay since that original Arcia demotion. So they do have another player that they can play there at short. So let's see if they can get Arcia to go down there and relax. I mean, it's a pretty good offensive environment at Colorado Springs for the most part. So they just need to get him to relax. Stop swinging at everything. It's incredible some of the stuff he swings at. And he's just gotta, if you don't make major league pitchers throw you strikes, they never will. And so he's got to regain that play discipline. That's where it'll start. And then get his mechanics squared away and then get his confidence back. So that's where we are today with Orlando Arcia.
Yeah, Brad Miller joining the team since our last podcast has started out pretty well. Had a three-run homer that almost brought the Brewers all the way back against the Royals last week Wednesday, and has had a couple other big hits as well. The Brewers seem to have found the ceiling on their pitching depth. They've been rotating guys in, kind of everybody's. I think everybody pretty much agrees it's been a pretty good strategy how they've been able to keep fresh arms and sort of rotate through the depth in AAA. But a couple guys came up over the weekend. Wilkerson really struggled. Mike Zagurski really struggled in his first opportunity to get some innings. I don't believe he recorded an out in his outing against the Reds. Are you surprised that they went with those guys instead of the guys that they have been going with, like Woodruff, Brandon Woodruff, Jorge Lopez? Maybe they're sort of just kind of seeing what they have with some of these arms, rather than go with the guys that they've had up there before.
Well, once you send a player down, unless somebody's injured, they have to stay down 10 days. So I know Lopez had not been down 10 days when they were in need of arms, and therefore they could not recall him. And so you just can't alternate them as often and as frequently as you want to. You do, barring an injury, you do have to keep a guy down for 10 days. So they've run afoul of that. They're in a stretch. They're one week into a 3 week stretch with no off days, and they knew that was going to tax the bullpen. And he's got guys he really trusts in high leverage, in particular Jeffress, Hader, and Knebel. But you can't use them every day. They weren't available Saturday, and some of them weren't available Sunday if they would have needed them. They ran out of arms Saturday. They couldn't get to Knebel in the ninth inning with a lead because the Reds kept pecking away until they finally went ahead. And so, you mentioned Zagurski. He had a rough inning, and then Barnes came in, and the whole thing fell apart. So, they do have guys that have been very successful. And they held the Reds down offensively very well the first two games of that series with using those high leverage relievers behind their starters. So those guys can be effective, but you can't use them every day. Some people think you can, you just can't. I had someone email me Friday night who doesn't understand bullpen management at all and said, "How could he not Saturday night? How could he not go to Jefferson Hader with a game on the line?" Because those guys had pitched several days in a row. That's why. These guys can't pitch every day. The thing that people understand the least for me, fans, about the way you operate a team is bullpen management, because they don't care whether you rest people or not, you know. And so if their arms fall off and they can't comb their hair or brush their teeth the rest of the year, fine, you know. That's the way some fans see it. Just run them out there until they collapse. And you know, you can't do that though. And you have eight guys out there, seven or eight guys out there for a reason, and you have to alternate those guys. And there was a point earlier this year where all the guys were pitching well, except for Boone Logan, everybody. But Williams has struggled recently. Jennings has struggled recently. You know, it's really hard to keep everybody in the bullpen going great at the same time. But they did for the longest of time have almost the whole bullpen going well, and that's the reason they won so many games. So they're at a little bit of, you know, a critical point right now in bullpen usage. And as I mentioned, no off days now for 2 more weeks. So this is not going to get any easier. You know, these guys are not, you're not going to get a rain out at Miller Park unless there's some catastrophic roof failure. And so they're going to play these games. And these relievers, you know, they're trying to get to the All-Star break with their bullpen, you know, still in decent health and rest, and you know, fairly rested. So we'll see how it goes, but it's not going to get easier as they keep moving forward without any off days on the schedule.
Right, and another part of that has been just the injuries in general with the position players as well. Certainly some notable ones, Kane, Yelich, and Braun. And this is something we've touched on before, but why do you think it is that the team is so hesitant to use that 10-day DL? Obviously, you don't want to lose Christian Yelich for, let's say, 6 games if you don't have to, if he's only going to miss 3 or 4. But on the other hand, it's understandable why someone would ask, why not just give them the extra week of rest, especially given this stretch where there are no off days? And I guess then the counterpoint is you see Ryan Braun, who seems to be a player who can still perform when he's not at 100%. He, you know, is injured for a couple of days, comes back and hits a home run on Sunday. So maybe the counterpoint is you just can't throw away 5 or 6 games with these guys. On the other hand, the Brewers do end up playing shorthanded. So are you surprised that there still is this hesitancy to use the 10-day DL?
Well, I know, as you just noted, you don't want to lose your top guys for 10 days if you don't have to. So generally, if a guy need, you know, is on the cusp, they wait a few days, and then if he says he can play, they don't do it. If they don't, then they go ahead and do it. You know, they made a fairly quick judgment with Lorenzo Cain's groin strain that he was not going to be able to play, and they put him on the DL. But these back situations that Braun and Yelich have, it's, you know, anybody that has like a tricky back knows one day it hurts like crazy and the next day it feels fine. And so they've been kind of waiting on those guys. It will be interesting to see how much longer they can wait on Yelich. I mean, Braun did play yesterday, but Yelich has been out now for a few days. You're going to get to the point where you're halfway into that 10 days and you might as well just go ahead and use it. The Shaw thing, and again, I get why you don't want to lose your cleanup hitter. But the Shaw thing's been a little puzzling because of he has not been productive while they've tried to ride this wrist thing out. He hit one home run in June and has not been productive at all in general for a few weeks. But and understandably so, he's got a bad wrist, you know. So I wonder if they're going to wish in the long run, like if he doesn't get going at all, if then they end up do having to put him on the DL, then look at all the games they wasted of no production from him. So I do wonder if they'll second guess themselves on that, because it has not worked to let him have a few days off, then try to play, then a few more days off, then try to play. It just has not worked as far as productivity. Again, I understand why you do not want to lose your cleanup hitter. And let's just look at yesterday's lineup, the Sunday lineup in Cincinnati, in which, you know, they only scored 2 runs, and that was on a ninth inning home run by Braun. If he doesn't hit that home run, they get shut out for the 11th time this year. So Kane was on the DL. Yelich still out with a bad back. Aguilar was given a day off because he's, you know, they've used him almost every day, and he's a big guy, you know, 290 pounds, and it was sweltering hot there for the whole weekend. He needed a day off, so he didn't play. Shaw played with one good wrist. And then Braun came back from back tightness and played. But look at that. When we've already talked many times on the podcast about how they're not getting any production from the bottom of their lineup. But look what was missing from the top of the lineup.
Right.
And should we really be shocked that they struggled offensively? I know Great American Ballpark is an offensive ballpark, but you need to have something resembling your real team out there, and they did not. So no surprise to me. They're at a little bit of critical mass now with their lineup. Again, as we just mentioned, there's no days off coming up. And I'm really interested to see what happens in this series against the Twins because they just got bludgeoned for 3 straight days in Chicago. The Cubs scored double figure runs every day. I think I read it was the first time since the 30s that they had scored double figures in every game of a series. So the Twins pitching is in a mess, absolute mess right now, and they've fallen to 10 games under 500. So as they come to Milwaukee with a tattered pitching staff and the Brewers throw up a tattered offensive lineup, I mean, which one's going to give? It's going to be interesting to see if just how that matchup happens. You'd have a team that's having trouble pitching against a team that's having trouble hitting. So we'll see. I think that makes for an interesting matchup.
Right. Let's move into some quick hitters. A little bit of consternation among fans about Bryce Terang, the first round draft pick for the Brewers this year. The signing, the deadline is approaching here, where first round picks have to sign, or the Brewers will lose the rights to anybody who is unsigned. I think most people kind of understand how the game is played and that this is not unusual. But is there any consternation on your part that you think there is? It is a little suspicious that the Brewers have yet to sign their first round pick.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know that they're going to sign him. I have. The Terang camp has been on lockdown since the draft. His agent Casey Close is well known for keeping things close to the vest and not really talking to the media. So we don't know where they stand. I think it's safe to assume he wants more than the slot value, or he would have signed. The slot value for the 21st pick is a little over $3 million. He obviously wants more than that. His agent also has probably been waiting to see what the aggregate spendings were in the top 10. For people that don't know, you have so much money slotted for those top 10 guys, and you can either go over, under, or stay right there. And so right now, it's impossible to know what he's asking for, how much more. My calculations have them around more than 600,000 below slot for their top 10. After that, it's all 125,000 is the cap for everybody after the top 10. So they have saved some money in slot value on some of their top 10 signings, but whether it's enough to get Terang to sign or not, I don't know. He's got a scholarship to LSU, and that's a very good baseball school. But there's many instances in draft history where the first round pick doesn't take the money, does not improve his value, and then ends up not getting as much when he's drafted 3 years later. You got to wait 3 years. Once you go to a 4-year school, you got to wait 3 years to be drafted again. If he goes and crushes it for 3 years and gets picked number one overall in 2021, then it would be a brilliant move to go to college. So we'll see. I know they want to sign him, but there's only so far they can go. If you go more than 5% over your bonus pool, JR, you lose your first round draft pick for next year. They're not going to do that. So.
Other things coming up in July, the All-Star game, of course, midway through the month. All-Star rosters should be announced here over the next week. What is your final prediction for who's going to represent the Brewers? I personally think it might just be Josh Hader. We've talked about how great Jesus Aguilar has been, and Jeremy Jeffress and a bunch of other guys, but I think it might just be Hader. What do you think?
It's a good chance that that happens. And not because there's no other deserving players, it's because of the rule that every team has to have at least one, and there is a roster limit. They're going to have to fulfill those obligations first. First, there's a bunch of great first basemen out there, so it'd be easy to leave Aguilar off even without those limitations. It's hard to imagine two non-closers taken from the same bullpen, so I think that hurts Jeremy Jeffress's chances. Even, I mean, if you're he's pitching all-star quality baseball, but that doesn't mean you're going to make the all-star team. So that could, Hader got all the publicity, the national notoriety early for all his strikeouts. He hasn't been as good the last week or so, but he already built up a lot of national attention prior to that. So it'd be hard, and he's a left-handed guy who strikes people out, so it's hard not to pick him. So there's a chance of that. That would be unfortunate because they have some other guys who are playing all-star quality baseball, but those restrictions, those roster restrictions where every team has to be representative, lots of of people who should make it, lots of deserving players don't make it. The thing that sometimes shakes out afterward, though, JR, is guys pull out for various reasons,
Right.
health or none of it. So just because you don't make it in the initial selection doesn't mean you won't get added later. We've seen that, and maybe they'd at least put Aguilar on that final vote ballot where fans get to pick the last player. So we'll see. But one thing I think we can safely say is Aguilar has played at an all-star level this year. I don't think anybody's going to suggest that he has not.
Right, and the point in Jeffress's favor is you'll see a lot of guys that aren't able to pitch in the All-Star game because they pitch that final day before the All-Star break. So there may be a few more pitchers of spots available, and maybe that'll work in his favor. But speaking of Jesus Aguilar, I'm going to play my interview with him here shortly. I think he just turned 28 years old this past week, so he's kind of in the prime of his career, and obviously it's very exciting what he's done this season, and he was solid last year. Is it possible that this is sustainable? I mean, at some point you start thinking about maybe it's not just a 1 and a 1.5 year wonder, that this guy could actually be a key piece for the Brewers for the next 3, 4, 5 years. Have we gotten to the point where we can really think about that, or is it still a little bit of wait and see?
No, I don't see that why there's any reason to think that he can't be a good player moving forward. As you said, he just turned 28. He is in the prime of his career. This is a guy who tore it up for 3 years in AAA in Cleveland's system, but kept getting blocked, by the likes of Mike Napoli and Santana and just all these really good proven first basemen that they had. He just never got his chance. And the Brewers gave him his chance. He played very well off the bench last year. And now, when Thames went out, you got to give credit to a player who gets an opportunity and just seizes it like this. He deserves all the credit in the world. Remember back to spring training, we were wondering if he was even going to make the roster. Can you imagine where the Brewers would be right now without Aguilar? They might be 10 wins less. And how many games has he just personally won?
Yeah.
A bunch. And so he deserves all the credit in the world. And Thames has another year, I believe, plus an option past this year. And right now they're playing him mostly in the outfield. So maybe they'll use Thames in a trade at the All-Star break for somebody that's looking for a first baseman to get something else they need. They do have some depth there now. As soon as you trade depth, though, I mean, look at their outfield now. They're for two straight games in Cincinnati, they were missing their starting outfield, Braun, Yelich, Kane. I don't think any of us saw that coming. So good thing they didn't trade Keon Broxton, huh?
Right. Well, and even still, they managed to have Brett Phillips and Domingo Santana at AAA. So somehow they still do have some options. But yeah, that outfield arrangement was pretty interesting. So last thought, another interview coming up. Tom Flanagan, the Brewers farm director. We talked about a lot of the prospects in the organization, and obviously those are some key pieces for the future, but maybe also the present with the trade deadline ahead soon. Some of those guys could be on the move, or at least being discussed as on the move. The Brewers have a deep farm system, but I don't know outside of Keston Hira if they really have real star power. Maybe Corbin Burnes kind of fits into that. Do you think Keston Hira is untouchable, or will be thought of as untouchable in these trade talks coming forward, or is pretty much everything on the table?
Well, I'll just say yes to both of those. I think that they don't want to trade him, but I think you do have to listen to everything. So I personally would be very hesitant to trade him because he looks to me like the best offensive draft pick they've had since Ryan Braun in 2005. I know people say, well, how can you say that after 1 year? Well, look what he's done in the 1 year. I mean, and he also tore up in spring training in that environment. He just looks like a great offensive player. And it's at a position, where if he came up, he might be the next Jeff Kent, for the Brewers. Because I use Jeff Kent as a comparable because Jeff Kent wasn't known as a great defender, but he was an all-star offensive player for year after year after year. The thing with Hira is he's had that elbow issue, and so they have to be careful with him. We don't know what kind of second baseman he's going to be, but if he's going to hit like this, he's not going to have to be a great defender. So just remember Ricky Weeks, how rough he was defensively when he first came up to the big leagues, but they had him in there for his bat. So I'd be reluctant to trade him. They already traded their number one prospect once in the last 6 months when they traded Brinson to Miami. He's struggling like crazy now, so maybe that would embolden them to trade their hero because they'll say, well, there's no guarantee that a prospect's going to play well, which is true. So you've heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. You always know what you should do by what the guy on the other end of the line is asking for, because he's going to tell you whether it makes sense to do something or not. You can't just willy-nilly get what you want and trade what you want. To get good players, you have to trade players. This administration does not seem to me like one that would do a massive clearing out of prospects for a rental player like a Manny Machado. They really, that would be against everything that they've tried to do for the last several years. Somebody like a Jacob deGrom would be different because he has 2 more years of control. So I just have the feeling that instead of like one of those like crazy blockbuster moves, they'll try to do a few things that just helps improve the team and without tearing apart their farm system. I know people want them to go for it right now, and they should, but if they then tear their farm system apart so much that they are not very good for the next 5 years, people may say, "Oh, I wish we didn't. I wish we hadn't have done that." So it's always a delicate balance between trying to win now. They did miss by 1 game last year, and that hurt. So that might influence them to do something big this year too, so that they don't miss by 1 game again.
Right. Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He'll be covering the team as they get set for a 7-game homestand, 3 against the Twins, 4 against the Atlanta Braves over the weekend. Tom, I think one last thought. The Honor Flight presentation is going to be on July 4th. You've had something, you've worked with that in the past, right? I believe you've even gone on an Honor Flight. Can you describe sort of that ceremony on July 4th that they're going to do before that game?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I did serve as a guardian on an honor flight in May, and the Korean War vet who I accompanied, Jose Ortiz, is coming out there with that group on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to being out there. It's one of the coolest things the Brewers do, and their association with the honor flight is a very, very worthwhile thing. And these veterans, just get treated the way they should always be treated, with utmost respect and dignity and tribute. And so it's really cool the Brewers do that. They are to be commended for it. And anybody that's out there tailgating on Wednesday might want to try to get in a few minutes early, because they'll do that ceremony before the game. And it's just a cool thing. It's going on that honor flight's one of the greatest things I've ever done. I'd go on another one at a minute's notice. And so, we're losing a lot of these older veterans now, and so it's great to pay tribute to the ones we still have alive.
Definitely. Find him at jsonline.com or on Twitter at Haudricourt. That's HAUDRICOURT. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, JR. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Tom Haudricourt for joining us on the podcast. Next up, we have Brewers first baseman Jesus Aguilar, all-star first baseman, maybe. We will find out in a couple weeks. But Jesus Aguilar, having a tremendous season, needs really no introduction. He has been an absolute gem for General Manager David Stearns, brought into the organization last year as a waiver claim. Had some success out of the gate, but nothing like this year, where he's basically cemented himself as the everyday first baseman. He's been hitting home runs. He's one of the top home run hitters in the National League. He's been on the spot with some major, major hits over the course of the season. So I talked to him about his I guess really upbringing in the Cleveland Indians system when he was coming over first from Venezuela, and then dealing with the issue of Carlos Santana being moved to first base and that sort of blocking him and any other first base prospects in the organization from getting a real shot at the big league level. So he talked about that. He talked about some of the uncertainty this year when the Brewers broke camp and they had a lot of options at first base, including Ryan Braun getting moved over there, not to mention Eric Thames. He says, yeah, he felt like this might be the end, or he was worried that it would be the end, and that he wasn't sure if he was going to be playing this season in Milwaukee. Brewers made sure that they found a way to keep him. Actually, broke camp with four first basemen, if you'll recall, with G-Man Choi making that opening day team. He was on the team for one day, but they really wanted to keep Jesus Aguilar. It has totally paid off now with the way he's been hitting. He's absolutely carried the team, and with injuries to Christian Yelich and Ryan Braun and Lorenzo Cain, a lot of the key playmakers are out, and Jesus Aguilar has been as important to the offense as anybody. So I enjoyed chatting with him. Give a listen to this.
Okay, so I wanted to start at the beginning of your career when you came in from Venezuela. Like,
right.
You hear a lot of stories about guys who struggle to sort of adapt when they move to the United States. What was your experience? How difficult was that for you?
It's kind of tough for us, especially with the language and then with the food. The good thing was I got a lot of Latin guy, like they was like try to let me know what's gonna happen when I come here.
Yeah.
I came here, you know. I was kind of good, but still like kind of tough because I don't even speak English. I don't even usually eat a lot of McDonald's or that kind of fast food, you know,
sure,
sort
sure.
of stuff. But when you come with your dream, your mind, that don't matter, you know.
Yeah.
That don't matter. The only thing what you can do, the only thing what you can control is keep pushing. That happened. It happened with me.
As you came through the organization in Cleveland, you hit for power pretty much across the board. Struggled at the big league level. I don't know. That was probably just opportunity, though, right? Like how?
Yeah, I mean, how I say before, I don't remember when was the last time in Cleveland when I played back to back game. It was hard. I don't complain about it. I just say like they don't give me that real chance, you know. Like I got it right now here. So.
Right, right.
But they made me strong mentally. They made me strong mentally. The last 3 years when I was in the minors, Triple A, was tough, but it was a good thing for me because they prepared me mentally. I don't want to pass for that process, but I got to go through it.
Sure.
And that happened to me until I get to the big leagues. I don't play. I just play like maybe lefty to a bat. Whatever happened in that moment, but it made me strong mentally, how you said before, and now I hit him,
yeah.
Kind of like strong mentally, and now I gotta keep going.
Did you pay attention to when they were moving Carlos Santana to first base? That was obviously going to be a detriment to anybody who was a first baseman in the minor league system. Were you paying attention to that, or was that just not something you were paying close mind to?
I don't pay attention to those things. I mean, I don't under control those things, you know. I just try to don't think about that. I just try to do my thing the right way. I said it so many times. I got a big warrant from me, and you know, and that moment was Santana and Swisher, and the other moment was Santana and Napoli, and then
yeah.
Santana and somebody else, you know. But well, how I say, like, I can't control what I can control.
Right.
This thing, yeah. Also,
yeah,
it's how I say. I mean, they do what they do. Happy to be here.
What do you remember about your first major league home run? Because that was a big one too in May of last year.
Yeah, it was in San Luis.
Yep.
Was in San Luis. And we win the game. I mean,
yeah.
We won the night. And it was kind of like one of my great moments here. You know, like especially when you get to the dugout, nobody say hi to you. You know, like,
yes.
Like what's wrong with those guys? You know, like just hit a homer,
do that take
the
everybody.
Lead, and nobody gonna say hi to me. All right, guys. But until that moment, I just keep pushing, you know, keep pushing. The rest is history, you know. I'm here now, right now. I think I do my job the right way, so
yeah.
Gotta keep pushing, man.
A little different when you hit a couple walk-off home runs this year. They were not shy about saying hi to you when you got back to the home plate.
For
huh?
sure, they were me there. They were me there. They were me there. I know good things happen, but
yeah. When you get into that situation, I know a lot of people just say they're looking for a pitch to drive, but you know that a home run is going to win the game. So, I mean, are you going out there trying? I mean, are you trying to hit a home run? That 13 pitch at bat?
No, you know, I think no. I just try to battle. All what I think is try to put a quality about there. You know,
yeah.
That's in my mind. I don't try to hit homer. I don't try to do like extra thing. I just try to put a good band in that bat.
Yeah.
Quality at bat and a lot of good things happen. I just try to see the ball good. Just try to drive the ball to the center field and that happened.
Awesome. The team obviously wanted to keep you out of spring training. Did it feel at any point like you might be moving somewhere else? Or I mean, what did you feel those last few days of spring training?
So until I get here to spring training, they don't got a spot for me. They don't got a spot for me. It was tough, especially when you come like a kind of good year.
Yeah.
It was last year from the bench. And, but the things goes perfect. I stay positive. I stay working. I stay like with a lot of confidence. It's not here, it's gonna be somewhere else.
Right.
That's how I think. It was tough because you don't know where you're gonna be. Family don't know where they go. You know what I mean? But God got everything.
Yeah.
God got everything. I'm here right now.
I'm not going anywhere now.
I don't think so, but you never know. But stay positive with a lot of confidence. That's just the word, like made me like who I am right now.
How excited were you to play third base? That's obviously one of the ways they've tried to keep everybody in the lineup. It seems like that's something you relish. Maybe I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I just try to move around the practice. I try to take one more there, sure. Just try to set my feet for the game. But I never expect like gonna start a game at third, you know. But it's how you're saying when you keep working, when you keep try to do the thing the right way, a lot of good things gonna happen. They showed me that confidence right in that game, like. You're gonna play third. It was like,
yeah,
you're gonna play there. All right, let's do it. Let's do. I think I did it well.
Yeah, you did.
Now I'm kind of everybody know like I can play a little bit of third. but it was a great moment. I don't even expect like you're gonna play third at the major league. You know.
Right.
But it was a great moment.
What was it like going back to face Cleveland again? You know, and Lorenzo Cain got to do the same thing against Kansas City. It's sort of a serendipitous thing.
It was kind of hard, you know, but was good until they see my numbers. Like, he did it. I mean, he's doing it. He's doing the. That made me feel good, but I turned the page. You know, I don't try to think about those guys. Like, just try to keep moving forward. They got great pitchers. They got great hitter. Yeah. Got a bunch of friends over there. So,
all right,
just keep moving.
All right, so last one. I'm sure you're aware of the biblical references, the Jesus puns that you hear every time you do something. You got a favorite one that you've heard that you like, or maybe you're not into that. I don't know.
I don't even know that. I don't even know that, but I agree. I mean, I don't really care about it. It's something good. Let's do it.
Next up, we have Brewers Farm Director Tom Flanagan. He is a lifelong Wisconsinite, really. He was a bat boy for the team in the early 90s, and he's now the farm director in charge of everything that's going on in the minor league system. Been an employee of the Brewers for a long time, and a great guy, very easy to talk to. We went in depth about a lot of individual players, some of the guys that you've heard of this year who are having good seasons, and some of the top draft picks from years past. And also talk to just a little bit about his job and what it entails. Things like what the mechanics are of getting a guy like Corbin Burnes, who's one of the top prospects in the organization, switching from starting pitching to relief pitching, as he's done recently, with the Brewers seemingly interested in using him in that capacity. Sort of just some of the basic stuff of what he does. And keep a lot of these names in mind, because with the trade deadline looming, July 31st, a lot of teams are going to be making moves. And if the Brewers are going to wind up with a top talent, some of the guys we talked about on this podcast are going to be guys who are on the move. Or keep them in mind, because they could very well be big-time contributors to the Brewers over the next couple seasons. So hope you enjoy this.
My guest is Brewers Farm Director Tom Flanagan. He is in charge of the Brewers minor league system for the most part. He and a cast of many others. They have implemented several new players into the system following the draft in early June. And so that's my first question. There's so many new guys joining the system. Kind of curious what those first few weeks are like. What are the expectations you guys have for that class? Like, are you looking for stats and numbers, or is it just about acclimation early in the season?
More than anything, it's a large influx of guys. You're more just trying to get them acclimated to pro ball, sure. The lifestyle, the day-to-day routine. And routine's a big word we'll push with these guys as they move up, and it's something that, quite honestly, they need to get into one in a hurry, but it's something that they'll modify as they go. But it'll really help their daily life as a professional if they have kind of some go-to points throughout the day, whether it's early work on their own, individual work, strength conditioning things, just things that they can do to help them get both physically and mentally ready to play. So we're just trying to acclimate these guys into pro ball. The stats are much further down the line, especially for that first year out.
As you evaluate these guys, a lot of them obviously have habits that they've picked up that I'm sure the minor league staff is going to look at. Do you look at that right away? Are you trying to change their game right away and get them? Or is it just about, you know, do your thing for the next 3 months and then we'll figure it out starting next year, your first full year in pro ball?
It's more so the latter. Usually that first year out, these guys were selected for a reason.
Yeah,
so unless our scouts come up with something that they've identified that would be more of a dramatic issue that we've identified from the scouting side, we pretty much let those guys play the first year, with the exception of if there's something mechanically somebody's doing that may be injury risk heavy, then we may take a look at that. But for the most part, it's really just to let them play, get acclimated to pro ball, and then most of the guys will get a chance to play in instructional league this fall after the season ends. So in that environment, then we may start to tweak a little bit if we see some things we've identified over that first 3 months or so.
I'm curious about your relationship to prospect lists. There's a lot out there, a lot of different places. Voluntary, they think, are the top 20, 30 guys in the organization. Is there anything instructive that you guys take from that? And do you guys have, like, your own list? I mean, I'm sure you're looking at different positions, different skill sets, but do you sort of have an unofficial ranking of who your top 20 or 30 guys are?
Yeah, I think for the most part, everybody's curious. When you're in this industry, you're going to, you know, soak up as much info as you can. Right. So there's certainly, you know, there's an entertainment value or a fun factor of looking at them.
Makes it more accessible, I guess.
Absolutely. But I have a lot of respect for people that put the list together just because it's so daunting of a task. I mean, it's hard enough to do small groups within our organization who we feel we have a good grasp on, but to do it over the whole industry or league, it's pretty difficult. But for the most part, we have our own evaluations, but since they're all our players, we certainly have to kind of rank them in our own minds or as an organization. But in terms of a specific list, it probably is more individual evaluator, you know, side by side, and different guys will stack them up differently.
How do you look at Colorado Springs? No secret that it's a hitter's haven, and it's everything's at altitude, and numbers, I don't even know if they're meaningful at all. With that being a AAA organization, though, there has to be some evaluation you can still do. So what? How do you put that into the equation? How do you look at Springs, Springs stats?
Sure. I think we take it in perspective. It's all in league context and park context. So everybody that plays there, you can compare a little more apples to apples. But, you know, playing in a park on the road that may be a little more pitcher friendly versus, or a different league, International League versus the PCL, certainly are going to really vary. So we try and look at the factors that the pitcher or hitter can really control. But I think one good thing that's happened, both in terms of our players and definitely with our staff, we haven't really talked as much about it, just because at the end of the day, we've learned that some of the pitchers that have pitched there, you know, there's certain things they've learned about themselves, just the way they attack hitters, the importance of throwing strikes or throwing good strikes, and I think it's helped these guys to a certain extent possible. Obviously, nobody likes, you know, giving up the pop-up home run here or there, or, you know, there's a lot of square footage in the outfield there, which is probably more the issue than the home run ball. But it's we've been lucky. We've had some really good, you know, speed outfielders there that can kind of pinch off some of those hits. So I think it's something that we've benefited from, although it wouldn't have been our first choice in terms of trying to play baseball at that altitude.
And hopefully it won't be there for a whole lot longer. Hopefully that gets worked out soon. As you staff the lower levels, what are you sort of looking for? Because I imagine there's guys who are going to be more focused on fundamentals than maybe a big league staff, but also maybe more of a counselor aspect, because you're talking about really young kids.
Sure.
What are sort of the traits that you see out of really good minor league instructors? What's sort of the priority?
I think number one, you want guys that are passionate about what they do, where the season may be a certain number of months, and we have spring training and instructs and things afterward, but we want guys that are kind of passionate, that year-round they're looking to get better themselves just as the players do. So that's probably first and foremost, because that'll touch all aspects of their coaching ability. But you really want a strong mix of guys. There may be certain guys that jump to mind that are, hey, these guys are really fundamentally sound, maybe infield instruction, things of that nature. And then other ones, you want a creativity factor. We have a number of our staff that we know it's a grind. They need to switch it up, especially with young players, just to keep them working at 100% efficiency and taking it every day. So I think the best staffs, you have a wide mix of guys, where you got some guys that may be more discipline-oriented, some guys are creative, but encompassing all the staff members, I think you need that consistency from each to the next, so they know what the organization's general philosophies are. Obviously, players are different, the staff's going to be different, but those overarching philosophies, you can't waver on those as you go.
I'll use the Corbin Burns to relief as sort of an example here. What are the mechanics of something like that? Obviously, you've got the manager, the general manager, who are looking for something on the big league club, and then do they go to you and you hand that down? I mean, what is the collaboration process and how to use players, because you know what they're going to be like on the next level?
Sure. I think something like that, I think it's something where the origination of the idea could be from anywhere, but I think in that case, specifically with Burns, it's more coming from David Stearns and probably in discussions with Craig, obviously always striving to improve the big league club and knowing that we have a number of starting pitchers that are doing pretty well, and then we have a couple more that are coming back from injury here soon, looking at ways where we can supplement the big league club. Just giving him the opportunity to do that at AAA, I think is big. So that idea kind of comes to me, and then I talk to our roving pitching coordinators, Mark Dewey and Chris Hook. They sort of map out a strategy, hey, how best to accomplish this? What does it look like in terms of going from that every fifth day to now probably every 2 to 3 days, kind of a scripted priority reliever, so to speak, and then eventually kind of normal member of the bullpen pitching multiple innings. So we map it out. We have a conversation usually between that local pitching coach, Fred Dabney, who's at Colorado Springs, and the manager, Rick Sweet. They'll sit down with Corbin and kind of detail it out, make sure all the questions are answered from his perspective. Why are we doing this? What are we doing? What questions does he have? And he's been on board since we started, and obviously it's a process. It's got some time to go yet, but he's got to learn about himself. Most prominent in our discussions were, you're going to have to get ready so much quicker as a reliever than you do as a starter. So that's been the biggest thing for him. I don't think he's had any issues with it, but it's just something he hadn't done in a while coming in out of the pen. So a lot of moving parts. We try and get all the questions out on the table.
All right, so the fun part. We'll go through some top prospects or guys that I know Brewers fans are interested in, starting with Keston Hiura, who's, I think, kind of the consensus top player and the top prospect in the organization at this point. Coming through that injury that was sort of a question mark when he was drafted, is he completely over that now? Is he just like, obviously he's hitting the ball extremely well at AA, so does he still have hurdles he has to overcome before he is fully healthy?
Yeah, I think health-wise, everything's in place. I think he's fully healthy, and to prove that point, we've kind of had to run him out there at second base quite a bit at AA Biloxi, and now they have some DH games, so we've given him a day or two, kind of rotated guys through that, so it's a little bit of a breather for him, but he's made all the plays, and he's looked really good at second base. I think now that the health is there, I mean, obviously the bat, he's one of the fun guys, everybody wants to watch him hit, so
it's crazy.
He's fun to watch, but I think defensively, still has certainly work to do, like a lot of young players, but I think that's something where he put the elbow issue behind him and seems to be 100% now. So looking for big things out of Keston.
Former first-round draft pick Corey Ray seemed to have discovered a power stroke earlier this year, where he was just hitting home runs every game pretty much. Yeah. Where does he stand? Because he sort of struggled a little bit out of the gate, and now he seems to be sort of building his prospect status back up.
Yep, Corey's he's probably in a way our breakout guy this year, where you knew it was going to happen, but it was great to see. He kind of came into spring training and noticeably different from last year in terms of, I touched on routine earlier, he's very routine oriented. I think he's found something that really works for him right now, and he's been able to take that into games, and he's when you watch him just from BP to game action, it's all there. Stuff we saw, our our scouts saw as an amateur and we saw flashes of in the past. He's bringing that to the park every day, so it's been a good progression for Corey.
Pitcher that the team acquired in the Jonathan McCroy trade, Luis Ortiz, who's he's been at Double A, I think, the second year, I think, in Double A, right?
Yep.
I'm a fan of bigger guys. He's a little bit of a bigger guy, so I am eager to see him at the higher levels. How is he doing? I know he doesn't throw 95 miles an hour all the time, but is he a guy who's still going to be filtering upwards, still thought of very highly?
Absolutely, yeah. Big arm. He's had a mixed year. He had a one hamstring / groin issue this year that took him out for a little while. But for the most part, he's been pretty much starting or as part of a tandem all year in Biloxi. And he's really flashed, especially coming in out of the pen and the backside of the tandem. He's looked really good. But he'll run it up there at times, probably mid-90s, but he's more in that 92, 93 range. But he really can pitch, and he's really a weapon coming in out of the pen. So I think he's a guy that Brewer fans will certainly see short time here.
Right. Zach Brown is a guy who's really surged onto people's radar, obviously almost threw a no-hitter, and seems to be a guy that is kind of the breakout performer this year. Does he come as a surprise to you, or was he somebody that's always been up there?
Yeah, he's definitely a breakout guy on the national scene or the public scene, but he was a guy that internally our guys really liked last year. He was at Wisconsin probably a little bit longer than his performance dictated.
Sure.
Briefly touched Carolina at the end of the year and then didn't show any hesitation about sending him to Double A this year. But he's been a guy that he's a competitor, as good a competitor as we have on the mound, and he has all the pitches. And now this year I think he's just hit that next gear where he's looking forward to that fifth day.
A guy I don't know a lot about, but a guy who's been in the organization for a while is Yantel Segovia at Wisconsin. He was the minor league player of the month in April, I believe. It seems like he's got pretty good contact hitting skills. What sort of things make him stand out?
Yeah, he's a guy that he's been young for the level pretty much up until last year, and I think the size, he's filled out a little bit, kind of caught up to his age a little bit, it's filling out. So I think last year was more of a down year for him. But now this year, just from spring training beginning and then what he did at Wisconsin, now at Carolina, he's just kind of found that stroke that he had before. But now that his frame has filled out, he's found more doubles power. And interesting guy. He really can hit, goes the other way very well, and has all those ingredients that make a more complete hitter.
A guy that just got promoted from Wisconsin is Demi Orimaloy, who's unfortunately was compared, I remember, to Bo Jackson when he was drafted, which is the most unfair of comparisons imaginable. But he is working his way up. He was young when he was drafted. I feel like that's your next breakout guy, or at least that's a guy that could be that candidate for something like that.
Yeah, Demi's really coming. He's a hard worker, number one. Puts in the time. Promotion obviously to Carolina was well deserved, but he's a guy that we have him playing some more center field in Carolina. He can really, really run for a bigger guy. I mean, the Bo Jackson comparison certainly unfair, but he's got those similarities where he's athletic in a way like that. Nobody's Bo, but Demi's pretty premium athlete. So he's having a good season. Hopefully he continues it at Carolina, but he's a guy to watch for sure.
A couple guys at AAA who aren't considered prospects, but I know a lot of Brewers fans are wondering if they might be here at some point, Nate Orff and Dylan Moore, and Kyle Wren even before he was just released by the organization. Well, how do you sort of work with guys like that, guys who are a little bit been around the block a little bit longer, veterans? They probably have done enough to be on the big league team, but it has, roster gymnastics, it's kind of understandable. How do you work with guys like that? Are you sort of just letting them be veterans and leaders, or are you working pretty closely with those guys too?
No, absolutely. I think Nate Orff, he's going to get his opportunity. He's a big league talent. It's got to be the right opportunity certainly here to get him up, but I think he's going to get his chance. He is a guy that I just got done seeing Colorado Springs for 4 games, and continually when you see Nate, he grinds out at bats, probably gives the best at bats on that club, and goes all foul pole to foul pole. He's got a little pop in there, can play really well defensively wherever you put him. He's even dabbled in the outfield and can hold his own out there. Dylan Moore, on the other hand, he was a release player that we signed just at the end of spring training, and he's really had a nice year for us. So he's a guy that the fans up here could see as well at some point, the right time, right opportunity. But he's putting up numbers first off at Double A, and now he's doing it again at Triple A. Very versatile defensively, runs a little bit, he's got some juice in the bat. So both guys, I would say they're definite prospects still. And regardless of age, I think Orff was a late starter, so age is, he's always been old for the level, but he's always performed wherever we've put him. So he's a guy that I think he'll make his way here to Miller Park for sure.
All right, so I'll put you on the spot a little bit for our last question. I'm sure you get asked all the time, a sleeper in the organization, somebody that we haven't talked about or that we're not talking about maybe as much as we could. Is there anybody that jumps to mind who's had a particularly strong 2018 that really will start to get our attention soon?
Yeah, I think there's a number of guys. For me, it's always tough to say sleeper just because I'm aware of them.
Oh,
but,
of course,
yeah. But I would say that a guy that's probably, you know, from the surface, under the radar, that's performing pretty well is Bowden Francis.
Yeah, okay.
He's a pitcher at Wisconsin, just threw probably his best game the other night against Quad Cities, but he's a guy that was, an eighth round pick last year at a Florida junior college, and he's a guy that I think fans should become familiar with. He's new to this is his first full season, so again, not sure he fits that sleeper
right.
definition, but he's a name.
I think he does, for sure. Yeah. Peyton Henry might be another guy, you know, a catcher who I know has had some successes here. So,
yeah, Peyton's had it. That's a good one. He's a for us, again, tough to say sleeper, but he's had a heck of a year. I mean, defensively, offensively, he's really broken out as well.
All right, Tom Flanagan, Brewers Farm Director. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, JR. Anytime.
That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the podcast. It was a busy one and a long one. Hope you hung with us. As Tom Haudricourt said earlier in the podcast, you should definitely, if you get a chance to go to the July 4th game against the Twins, you should get in there a little bit early to check out the Honor Flight presentation. It is a very cool moment and a lot of opportunities to check out the Brewers here this full week with 1 week after that and then the All-Star break. We have definitely, we've already crossed the halfway point. You can actually check out, I put together a rundown of the 15 best highlights from the first half of the season, the true first half of the season. So after 81 games, the Keon Broxton game, the 81st of those games was the second game of the Red Series where Keon Broxton did just about everything. Two home runs, made a diving catch, had a crazy base running play, had an RBI single for good measure. So check that list out, 15. I think you'll like what my number one is. And there have been some pretty good memories. Even top 5, 10 plays are still plays that I think we'll be talking about a couple years from now. You can also check out my look back at June of 2008. Been keeping track of the 2008 season going month by month, looking at memories from the season when the Brewers broke that 26-year drought of making the playoffs. Crazy season, and enjoying going back and reliving some of those games. There's a game against the Blue Jays in June of 2008 that is very, very memorable for a number of reasons. Dave Bush nearly throwing a no-hitter in that one. So, again, check us out on Apple Podcasts. You can rate us, rank us, review us, do whatever. Whatever you do is going to help us reach more people and more Brewers fans. Thanks for listening. We'll check you out soon.